This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, quick update from what I mentioned at the top of the show about Sean Couturier and the Philadelphia Flyers on his benching this evening. This is from Jamie Bascow, covers the Philadelphia Flyers. When asked about if this is testing his patience, he responds, definitely. Control what I can control, I guess. Put my ego aside here. We need to find a way to get a win tonight. He said he talked to Tortorella somewhat, and it doesn't matter what he thinks. He just wants the team to win tonight. The Flyers scratching their new captain, Sean Couturier, for the game tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs. John Tortorella is back, baby. And the Carolina Hurricanes are back to their winning ways as well. Winners of five of their last six. They are capital H hot, and Corey Lavalette knows that very well. Senior editor for North State Journal. He joins me now. Corey, how are you, pal?
Hey, Jeff. How are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So, before you came on, Greg Wyshynski and I were just talking, you know, briefly before he went to break about the, I can't remember how Greg phrased it or couched it, the feel-good campaign of Yevgeny Kuznetsov, who seems to have found a home in with the Carolina Hurricanes. Fans love him. Teams seem to love him. Love the interview that I saw the other day, him and Dmitry Orlov with their arms around each other, bro-ing it up together. I don't know, like, I don't know there's a question here for you, Corey, other than, man, this is just a really feel-good story here. Someone that needed a second chance found it in an organization like the Carolina Hurricanes, clearly.
Yeah, I didn't know what a, I guess, a character he is. He's a really interesting guy.
Oh, yeah.
The first time we spoke to him, he was very forthright about knowing he's made mistakes in his life, and he's saying he doesn't regret the mistakes, that everything he's done he's had to learn from, and sees this as a last chance to be a, you know, an impact NHL player. And so far he's making good on that. You mentioned, yeah, Dmitry Orlov, and you know, they've known each other since they were 16. So they go, yep, way back, even before the Capitals, and are tight. And he's also, you know, he's got a couple other Russian guys there. He's really seemed like I already made a connection with Andrei Svechnikov and Pyotr Kochetkov. And it's been a great story. And it's a guy that, regardless of where you stand in your fandom, you want to see these guys, you know, point themselves in the right direction. And he's having fun. You know, it's, I think what gets lost a little is he's wanted out of Washington for a while. I think this isn't a,
yep,
you know, this wasn't like he got put on waivers and it was a big shock and then he got traded. You know, he had asked a while back and it's dragged on. That's got to weigh on you an awful lot. And now he's in the thick of a, you know, a playoff race with a team that looks like, you know, is as good as anyone in the NHL.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment about Washington as well. And let me see if I can push that one step further. Kuznetsov clearly wanted out some time ago, and the Washington Capitals wanted him out some time ago. But because of the contract situation, they just couldn't make that happen. So you can only imagine, like, in these situations, you always try to put yourself in the place of both sides here. And in this one, you know, I'm always sort of, you know, warmer to player than team. I always put myself in a person's situation, or try to, and say to yourself, like, what must have that, like, what could that have done to that player? And so maybe we look back, and did he have his challenges? Absolutely. But maybe you look back on the Washington Capitals scenario and say to yourself, well, how would you feel if you're in a work relationship where you wanted to leave, your employer wanted to get rid of you, but couldn't, and you were both stuck with each other, neither side wanting anything to do with the other side? Like, this must feel like the biggest breath of fresh air by Kuznetsov. I'll be honest with you. When I first heard, you know, before the trade happened, you know, the rumors started to get out there about Kuznetsov and the interest with Carolina, my first thought was, ooh, I don't know about this one, Don Waddell. I don't know about this one, Carolina Hurricanes. But then on second reflection, maybe of course it makes sense. The skill is still there. His head was just in an awful place with Washington.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, the contrast between him and Guentzel, both personality-wise. Guentzel's perfectly pleasant, but a pretty reserved guy, not overly talkative.
Yep.
you know, Evgeny kind of spills his guts out whenever we talk to him. And then on the ice, it's similar. Gensel fits that Hurricanes mentality of hard on the forecheck and getting in, you know, grinding things out while adding a lot of skill. Kuznetsov, I watch him, and I'm not saying he's not in on the forecheck, but man, the patience to his game, watching him, you know, I've watched him plenty, yeah. But watching him every night now, there is no panic in his game whatsoever. It's really fun to watch. And I mean, that's confidence, right? I mean, if he doesn't have confidence, that part of his game probably disappears. And getting a chance like this, and you know, that room is really good, and Rod is really good at welcoming guys in. So all of that, I think, plays a big, big role in just how much, you know, this has worked so far. We'll see where it goes in the long haul. And, you know, the risk is he's got another year on his deal. This isn't a, you know, let's see how the year goes. You know, he's got another year. But so far, just what an amazing talent. I mean, and like I said, just a really fun guy to talk to. Just really, really interesting character.
You know, that's an interesting comment too about, you know, he's not, I can't remember, Corey, how you phrased it. Maybe you can refresh my memory, which is leaving me day in and day out. How you talked about how, you know, he's really patient and he's really cool and he's really calm. He's not nervous in situations. He has like a real sort of groundedness about him, which is, you know, people could say, you know, quite remarkable considering what he's gone through both personally and professionally. And you know where you really see that? You see that in the shootout on the road. You know, when he gets the puck at center ice and he is going slowly. And it's on the road and you can hear the howls and everyone's on him. There's zero panic. It's almost like he relishes it. You know, like I know what you're talking about you know, the ice water through the veins. And the fun, like, well, I am fascinated with how he does his shootouts because he does go so slow. And where a lot of guys would react like, oh, geez, okay, I'm getting the cat calls. I better speed it up here. Or I don't want to put myself in a situation where I'm going to get criticized because he is coming in so slow and they're going to be talking about it on television and the fans in the building hate it. He doesn't care at all. I love that about him. Now, what about the rest of the Carolina Hurricanes? Anyone else we should focus so much on? Evgeny Kuznetsov, who's been such a wonderful story here. You mentioned Kochetkov as well. He's been a tremendous story. I am always curious about the blue line, and I'm really curious about players like Brett Pesce. Like, we've talked about Slavin, you and I, plenty of times, and Brent Burns. How do you see Pesce's future with the Carolina Hurricanes? That one, to me, is a bizarre one. Like, I'm sure they'd love to get him back in at 5x5. Don't think that's going to happen. How do you see Pesce's situation playing itself out?
You know, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and the thing I find interesting is that we just don't know how much this cap jump is going to affect everything, right? When Nino Niederreiter was going to be a free agent with the Hurricanes, I said ahead of time, you know, he thought he was going to go out and get a big deal, and it felt like he was the kind of guy who was going to get pinched, and he did. Just because there's high-end guys that teams want to spend their money on, and then there's guys who get, you know, lower-term deals, and those middle guys are the ones who are getting squeezed. And Brady Shea is going to get a truck backed up to him, I think. I no doubt about it. How good he's been. I wonder if Brett Pesce gets a truck backed up to him. I wonder if he ends up, unfortunately for him, being one of these guys who gets pinched a little bit as a guy who is a little more one-dimensional than Brady. A great penalty killer. I mean, Carolina's penalty kill has been lights out since Brind'Amour took over, and Brett Pesce's a huge, huge part of that. And just a really smart defensive player who has some offensive instincts, but I think has, you know, yielded to Brady Shea a lot in that role. So I'm curious to see. It's the kind of situation I could see like what happened with Nino. The Hurricanes did circle back on Nino before he signed with Nashville, and he ended up taking the Nashville deal. And then, you know, obviously ends up in Winnipeg. But I'm curious if Brett's going to hit the market and maybe see that big of a market isn't there for him that maybe he hoped. And that would give me pause to say maybe there's a chance for it coming back. Now, like I said, as soon as GMs have a few extra million dollars when the cap goes up, they go a little madcap. Sure. So we'll see how that plays out. But he's a guy I could see them, you know, circling back on maybe and seeing, you know, is there a spot for you here?
I got about 30 seconds. Totally unfair, Corey, but I'm going to do it anyway. Do you have a hot 30 for me on Kochetkov right now? One of my favorite netminders in the entire NHL.
Yeah, I mean, he's so fun to watch, right? The poke checks, the dropping the stick.
Yep.
The dropping the stick every time anyone's near the crease. Just all of it is so fun to watch. He's a fiery guy. He's got a fun personality. He's the total opposite of Frederik Andersen. I'm curious to see how he handles this challenge. He's being challenged by Frederik Andersen right now. Andersen has looked spectacular since coming back. He's made one mistake, which was mishandling a puck, and otherwise has been perfect. So I'm curious to see how he handles this challenge from the veteran guy who's come back and been really good.
You're my guy with the Hurricanes. Corey, always a pleasure, my friend. Enjoy tonight's matchup. Carolina Hurricanes facing off against the New York Islanders. That is a huge one. It is a 13-game evening around the NHL, and that is one of the games we clearly have circled. Thanks, pal. We'll talk soon.
Be well, Jeff. Always good catching up with you.
The great Corey Lavalette joining us here. When you want to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, that is the guy that you call. Time now for Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, Bet Local. There's a lot of great games on the board tonight. Just mentioning the Carolina Hurricanes facing off against the New York Islanders. There's a really interesting one between the Buffalo Sabres and the Vancouver Canucks with playoff ramifications there. But maybe, just maybe, the game of the night, based on who's playing here, Winnipeg Jets and the New York Rangers. Now, here we go. Rangers minus 1.5. Rick Bonus, by the way, had to go back to Winnipeg. A minor medical procedure is how the organization is describing it. Scott O'Neill will take the reins behind the bench for Winnipeg this evening. We've seen him coach to a lot of success earlier on this year when Rick Bonus had to tend to his wife. The total has gone over in 6 of Winnipeg's last 9 games. Winnipeg 2-5 straight up in their last 7 against the Rangers. The Rangers are 5-1 straight up in their last 6 games. The total has gone under in 6 of New York Rangers' last 6 games against Winnipeg. The New York Rangers are 9-1 straight up in their last 10 games at home. Still no Gabriel Vilardi for the Winnipeg Jets there. That is a real drag. Tyler Toffoli remains hot. 4 goals in 4 games for the Winnipeg Jets since coming over from the New Jersey Devils on that line with Monahan and Ehlers. Ryan Lindgren injury, Jacob Trouba injury as well. So the defense for the New York Rangers stretched a little bit. Zach Jones has been really good there. Chad Ruedel, we would imagine, may make his Rangers debut this evening. And this is the last back-to-back game for the New York Rangers, no more, for the Broadway Blue Shirts. That was Line Change, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, Bets Local. Coming up in a couple of moments, so we'll get on the Toronto Maple Leafs page with Luke Fox. Also, Elliot Friedman, an hour or two, checks in from the GM's meetings in Florida. Another hour, more information, more perspective, more snark. It's a Merrick Show, Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360 and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Jeff Merrick Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, bottom of the hour, Elliot Friedman stops by from Florida, home of the general manager's meetings, where we will discuss fascinating things like puck over the glass. I'm sure there's other things that are getting thrown around. Don't worry. Meanwhile, 13-game universe tonight around the NHL, and one of the more intriguing ones features a surprising scratch. Well, maybe not surprising considering it's John Tortorella, Sean Couturier, the captain, not playing. Welcome back, Torts. And welcome back to the program, Luke Fox from Sportsnet.ca, who covers the Maple Leafs. Luke, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jeff?
Better than Sean Couturier, even though he's trying to put a brave face on this entire thing here. Before we get on the Maple Leaf side of the ledger here, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's not as if this is, you know, the vintage Sean Couturier that we remember when he was, you know, before he went through his couple of surgeries on his back. Like, this isn't the Sean Couturier where, you know, every year we're penciling in some Selke Trophy votes. But still, I mean, this is a shock to the system, and it must be indicative of the Philadelphia Flyers, as much as they are still, again, focused on the future and, you know, rebuilding this organization and blah, blah, blah. Like, they're feeling the heat from the Washington Capitals and New York Islanders, and all of a sudden their playoff position isn't as solid as it was before John Tortorella got suspended in that famous incident with Wes McCauley. How do you read this reaction by the returning head coach?
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty dramatic. I mean, they just named Couturier captain mid-season. He hasn't even been captain that long. I just think it's a bold move, but one that is almost less about Couturier and more about the whole dressing room. Kind of, hey, we need to wake up here, folks. We're in this turtle derby, and we still have a chance to make the playoffs, even though, you know, we sold off Sean Walker at the deadline, even though, you know, coming into the season, we weren't supposed to be here. We're here. We want to be competitive. And if that means even healthy scratching the captain to get your attention and to dial it in and you know, make a go of this, hold on to that third seed in the Metro, we're going to do it. I don't mind it. I was shocked by it, but I don't mind it because it shows that there's a certain standard there that Torts wants upheld. And I find not a lot of coaches are willing to play that card. So I kind of appreciate it.
Yeah. He's not returning meekly. Like, he's, you know, very much returning with some thunder here. This isn't like he's not sort of, you know, slowly wading into the pool and testing the water with his toe. You know, this is off the 15 meter tower. Welcome back, John Tortorella, in a big way. The other thing that we wonder about, and I'm sure you've wondered about this as well, the last time these two teams met, last week, we saw an interesting exchange between assistant coach Rocky Thompson and Maple Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe over power play deployments during what was a blowout game, the Maple Leafs over the Philadelphia Flyers. Mike Rupp was on the show Friday and said, like, look, I have no problem if you want to throw PP1 out. That's fine. Everyone's grown-ups here. You know, do better if you don't want to see their first unit power play out there. You know, this isn't house league hockey here. There's, you know, we're not worried about feelings and offending the other team. But I do wonder if we see any carryover because of that. Because, I mean, listen, the Maple Leafs really had their way with the Philadelphia Flyers, and you can make the argument, went out of their way to rub their noses in it, kick sand in the face. And I can recall John Tortorella last year specifically saying, look, we're not as good as these other teams yet, but I'm remembering a lot of moments, and I'm remembering a lot of games, and, you know, one day the Philadelphia Flyers will respond. Do you think there will be some type of response tonight from the Philadelphia Flyers, or are the 2 points just too crucial?
Well, I think the 2 points are too crucial, especially to Philadelphia, less so Toronto, who's pretty nestled in to their spot in the playoff seeding. But I think it could get that way depending on the score, but they can't make retribution a priority. You know, I am a little curious to see if Rocky Thompson is still rocking a bolo tie. That was interesting. But Sheldon Keefe made a point to go after the game and talk to them. Because I think, and then he also pulled the first unit off earlier than he normally would. So I think either he was trying to make a point, or he's actually, it was legitimate in that he was trying to give guys a breath. But he backtracked from that move, which was, you know, rubbing their nose in it, or, you know, you could disguise it as, hey, we're trying to get our power play in order because the Leafs power play has had its struggles of late. But the fact that he said that he went and talked to the Flyers coaching staff after the game and tried to explain himself a little bit leads me to believe that, you know, he realizes maybe that was a little bit much considering the score was 6-1 at the time. But then he did point out they happened to go ahead and score a shorthanded goal. So the game was still being played.
Yeah. I mean, I always look at that. Like when coaches, I'll tell you, Luke, when coaches get upset about, you know, teams running out their first unit power play during blowout games, I always look at that and say, what the coach is trying to say here is take it easy on us. And I don't like that. I don't like, because that's essentially when you complain, oh, you're rubbing our noses at it. No, what you're doing is asking the other team to take it easy on you. Like if you asked Rocky Thompson before that game, hey, if the Maple Leafs get up by 5 goals in this game, do you want them to take it easy on you? What do you think the answer would be? The answer would be no. But if you're complaining about PP1 coming out during a blowout game, aren't you in essence doing the same thing? Just saying, hey, take it easy on us out here. Don't embarrass us.
Yeah, well, is it not also not embarrassing if you throw out your fourth line and your third deep pair to run a power play? Like, that's almost more insulting, no? Like,
totally.
You know, and also it's like, you know, come on. It's professional sports. Like, I totally understand it if it's this is in youth hockey, but these are all professionals. Like, if you don't want to get embarrassed or shown up or lose 7-1, don't go down 6-1.
Yeah, don't disagree. Okay, Maple Leafs ledger on this one here. No Mitch Marner. Jeez, I mean, I don't even know what the Marner question is at this point, other than anything that we've been able to glean new about the Marner situation, Luke?
No, I mean, just I think it is a little bit concerning the fact that Sheldon Keefe said yesterday that, you know, he skated a couple times by himself and then had to stop skating, and they're taking a step back and not having him push it. But I think the good thing is there's 16 games to go. They're very comfortable in their spot. Mitch Marner's health is so much more important than, you know, trying to run him out there and, you know, get a couple points against the Capitals or Flyers this week. So, you know, Brad Treliving was talking to Sean Reynolds down at the GM meetings, and he just basically said, we're just being extra cautious. So my feeling is if tonight was game one of the playoffs, Marner would probably be pushing through, taking a shot and just pushing through. So they're doing the right thing. Let it get as healed as possible. Don't rush it, because there's no urgency right now. And plus, the team is doing okay without him. They're still, you know, stacking up some points.
What do you see right now when you look at Austin Matthews? Like, I know anytime there's like a stretch, and he has scored recently as well, so it's not as if he's gone, you know, completely, you know, popcorn dry here. But what do you see when you see Austin Matthews right now, Luke?
I see a guy who's being challenged to drive his own line without the assistance of Mitch Marner. I really feel like, whether it comes from the GM or just the coaching staff, I feel like the Leafs are trying to spread the offense, spread the line drivers across a top nine instead of a top six, which is kind of their default and what they've always resorted to come playoff time, to see if they can have three effective lines, three lines that can put the defense on their heels. And in order to do that, Austin has to do a little bit more himself, and especially now with Marner on the sidelines. So, you know, tonight he's going to be trying to drag a guy like Pontus Holmberg, you know, who's been healthy scratched, who didn't make the team out of camp, who the team has high hopes for, but has really yet to establish himself as a consistent everyday NHLer, let alone a top six guy. So I think Austin's being challenged a little bit here. We need you to drive a line without Marner. And I think for the Leafs to have success in the playoffs, they're going to need that. They're going to need John Tavares, you know, whether he's second or third line, to do a little bit more. They're trying to spread out the riches a little bit. So that's what I see what's going on now. The heater he was on before was incredible. I'm not ruling him out for 70 goals just yet, but he has slipped a little off that pace.
At 55 now, we'll see what happens tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers. What do you make of Max Domi, the second half Max Domi. We know, like, a lot of the acquisitions in the offseason, well, I mean, Klingberg was a victim of injury, but whether it was Tyler Bertuzzi, whether it's, you know, Max Domi, Ryan Reeves, things didn't start out so great for any of the acquisitions by Brad Treliving. But you have a thought on where you see Max Domi now?
Yeah, much better. Much better. I think he is what he is, and I think his deficiencies are when he doesn't have the puck, when he's trying to get pucks out or trying to cover his man in the D zone. That's not his forte, and that's probably why he's been, you know, his shelf life with teams, you know, is short, keeps going to other teams because he hasn't established himself as a guy you want in protecting the lead in the last minute, say. And I think, you know, that's sort of the root of the frustration or the root of Sheldon Keefe trying to figure out where he fits. But when he plays to his strengths, he is excellent on the fun half of the center line. Like, his saucer passes are unbelievable. I think he's a great playmaker, has great vision, great speed. And the other thing about him is I love the emotion he shows. Even in the early season when things weren't going his way, there were a couple games where the Leafs were losing and he would grab a guy and he would like try to drag other guys into the fight and say like, yeah, we may be losing, but we're still in a hockey game here. And it got the bench's attention. I think it's endeared him to teammates. You know, the way he performed in Boston, even though it was a loss, was fantastic. He's had great moments, including, you know, some shootout winners, some clutch goals. So I really like the offense and playmaking he brings. I wonder whether they ultimately decide if they like him more at center or the wing. And part of it, you could, on the positive, you say it's his versatility, it's an asset. But there's the other way to look at it is, you know, you're really not perfect on either spot. So I feel like it's still a work in progress a little bit.
It's right around this time now, a little bit after trade deadline, where we start to wonder about what qualifies as success for a lot of teams. Like, I know if we mentioned Philadelphia a second ago and Maple Leafs are facing them tonight. And, you know, success for them in a lot of ways is, are the kids getting better? I know that there's a playoff spot up for grabs here. And, you know, anytime a team can, you know, rebuild and also make the playoffs, you know, that's bonus fries. But for the Philadelphia Flyers, it's still, are the kids getting better? Are the young players improving? Where are we at on our winning cycle here? Is Sammy Ersson improving and locking himself up as a long-term number one goaltender for the Flyers? But when you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, for the longest time, it was always first round success. Have to get out of the first round. Last year they did. They knocked off the Tampa Bay Lightning and then bowed out against the eventual Stanley Cup finalist Florida Panthers. What do you consider to be success this year for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Like, what has to happen in Brad Treliving's first year as a manager of this team?
I think you got to win two rounds, or if you go out in the second round, there's no excuse going out the first round, which is maybe too high of a bar because they're going to be underdogs in that first round. But with what they achieved last season, I think they absolutely have to win a round. And if you're going to lose in the second round, you got to push it to seven. You got to go down fighting. You got to leave the fan base saying, oh, they should have won that, or they could have won that. You can't go out the way you went out against Florida last year. You know, maybe that's unfair because they're the third seed. They're going to be underdogs whether they get Boston or Florida. But I just think with the fact that you have all your top guys that you're paying gobs of money to, they're all having good years. Yeah, Marner's a little banged up right now, but they're all having strong years. They're all in their prime. They've had many, many a playoff disappointment. It's time to see some actual results and no more moral victories. They got to win a couple rounds.
I don't disagree, but I always come back to what's the next step of that sentence, and that is, or else blank.
Well, you know what I mean? Gone. I think,
like,
Sheldon's
I understand.
Gone.
Like, you think it's a coaching decision?
I think it's a
coaching decision?
Well, they've already given Matthews and Nylander, their monster raises. Marner has full no move. I don't, you know, that's a very complicated trade to make. What else are you going to do? I think Brad Treliving saved this bullet for a reason. And I think if they don't perform strongly in the playoffs, and I'm not, who knows how it goes down? It might not be Keith's fault. I just feel like something has to change, and that's the easiest change to make.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a, we're going to get sort of ahead of ourselves. Actually, I want to do something. I want to look forwards and I want to look backwards. Maybe I should look backwards first before we sort of go into what's next for the Toronto Maple Leafs and the decisions on the horizon here. Are you as, maybe amazed is too strong a word, but I'll use it anyway. Are you as amazed at the fact that when we look at the history of this Maple Leafs team and their playoff failures, we ignore the fact that the one player whom I believe was almost irreplaceable because no one did what this guy did, never gets brought up. And that is how the Jake Muzzin injury completely scotched this team's chances of doing anything. Like, I know that John Tavares wears the C, but in some ways this was Jake Muzzin's team. And guys like that don't come around very often. The Maple Leafs traded for him with the Los Angeles Kings, as we all very well know. Did it seem as if, as we look back at the playoff failures, do you not look back and say, if only Jake Muzzin didn't get hurt?
Yep. Twice, right? The Columbus series and the Montreal series. And you have this steel trap memory, Jeff, so I know you're going to remember this. Tyler Toffoli, when he was with Montreal, was doing, or maybe he had just moved on, but he was talking about the Montreal series with you and Elliot for the podcast. And he said, we knew, as Canadians, we knew the Leafs were in trouble, that we were going to win that series when Muzzin got injured in the series. He didn't say when Tavares got injured. Yep. He said when Muzzin did. Muzzin, he pulled up lame with a pulled groin. And it's just, he brought something to the Leafs decor that they've been on a mission to replace ever since. So that's the reason why they brought in Jake McCabe, who's done an admirable job, but, you know, not quite to the level of Muzzin. It's the reason why they went and got Joel Edmondson. You know, they need more pure defenders. Yeah. They've invested in highly skilled guys that can put the puck in the net, and their best defenseman is an offensive defenseman. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. The Muzzin thing, I think when we look back and someone writes a book on this era of Maple Leafs, they're going to look at the Columbus series and the Montreal series as, probably wasted opportunities because of unfortunate injuries to Jake Muzzin in both those.
Okay, one last question, and this is about a look forward here. How do you see the Mitch Marner, not the injury, but a more like, you know, the contract and the extension or whatever happens in the offseason? He's available for extension on July 1st. How do you see this story playing itself out?
I see management sitting back and watching how Mitch Marner performs in the playoffs. And can he summon some more of the regular season Mitch Marner and be an impact guy, be a driver? Be something more than just secondary assists. Score some big goals. Have some great primary assists. Be influential on the special teams, which are hurting right now and have hurt them in playoffs past. He needs to be a star, because I'll tell you right now, he's not going to take a penny less than William Nylander to stay with the Maple Leafs. So, and I'm sure, and if he delivers, I think they'll pay him. But I think this is going to be a really critical postseason for Mitch Marner, who's stacked up excellent regular season after excellent regular season. But we've reached the point where I think management wants to see him deliver when it matters most.
All right. We'll look forward to tonight. The Maple Leafs facing off against the Philadelphia Flyers, one of 13 games on the board around the league this evening. Luke, thanks as always for stopping by. It's going to be a fascinating game. Sean Couturier scratched for the Philadelphia Flyers. John Tortorella is back behind the bench. for the Philadelphia Flyers against Sheldon Keefe and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we all know what happened last week between these two teams. We'll see what transpires this evening. Thanks, as always, for stopping by, sharing your expertise as well. Thanks, Luke.
Yeah, two coaches that have gotten fined for yelling at refs this year. So they've gotten kicked out. So it should
That's
be
right.
Good yeah.
Okay, so what's the over-under on both coaches staying in the game at this point or not being a little bit lighter in the pocketbook by the end of it?
Well, I'm worried about Torts because he's got the approval from ownership that they'll pay his fine. So
Dan Hilford, that's right.
He's the wild card.
Dan Hilford, he said, I could say anything and he's going to pay for it. So blah, blah, blah. Great stuff. Thanks as always, Luke. Thanks, Paul. You have a good day.
Okay, you too. Take care.
That's awesome. I believe we do have, by the way, and Elliot just tweeting out some stuff from the general managers meetings about rule changes that need to go through competition committee and board of governors for approval. Going to get to that at the bottom of the hour when Elliot drops by from the GM's meetings in Florida. In the meantime, we do have some audio from Sean Couturier, and this is a major story around the league. If you're just joining us now, Sean Couturier is being scratched tonight by the Philadelphia Flyers, recently named captain. He was on this program a couple of weeks ago talking about what that meant to him. He will not play tonight for the Philadelphia Flyers as they, you know, as they fight for their playoff lives here. I mean, they're in a really precipitous position, third position in the Metropolitan, being chased by the Capitals, chased by the Islanders. We all know what happened at trade deadline with Daniel Briere, the general manager, and the bodies that left. There's significant injury issues on the back end for the Philadelphia Flyers, which makes this scratch perhaps even that much more surprising. Anyhow, long-winded way of setting up this clip. This is Sean Couturier from earlier on today talking about his scratching tonight against the Maple Leafs.
The foot off frustration is this kind of testing your frustration and patience?
Definitely. Yeah. Like I said, I control what I can control. It is what it is. We move on.
Have you spoken with Tortorella about this yet or no?
Somewhat, but doesn't matter, honestly, what I think. Got to leave my ego aside, I guess, and hopefully the team finds a way to get a win here tonight, and I can get back into it soon.
You were the last guy off the ice. I know you're a pretty driven worker, but how much is this driving you even more?
Yeah, it's tough. I feel I've been putting the work in for a while. I know I've been struggling, trying to work on my game, so definitely frustrated the way I've been treated around, I guess, but lately. But it is what it is.
Yeah. Has he given you any direction what he needs to see from you or what you need to work on to make sure you're in the lineup and getting a lot more minutes than you have been?
Not really. I've gotten the same answer as you guys. Just need to see more. I'm still looking to find out what that is, but I'm trying every game. It's not like I'm just like sitting around or doing nothing. I think, like I said yesterday, I felt last couple games with the limited ice time or opportunities I've been getting, been doing all right. But I guess we're going and with the best lineup available tonight to get a win. So it is what it is.
Oh, boy. That is a frustrated Sean Couturier, a diplomatic still Sean Couturier. You can tell that he's a second-generation NHLer whose dad played in the National Hockey League and also is a coach. And you can tell that that is the voice of someone who has grown up around hockey, grown up around a dad in the NHL and a dad who also coaches. So we'll see where this one goes. It could either be a genius move by John Tortorella or this could completely blow up in the Philadelphia Flyers' face. We'll see what happens starting tonight. One of 13 games on the board, the Maple Leafs and the Philadelphia Flyers. Okay, a couple of things here in advance of talking to Elliot at the general manager's meetings right now in Florida, where, as Elliot tweets out, proposed rule changes coming out of the GM's meetings, which need to go through Competition Committee and Board of Governors for approval. Rule 63A4, adding goaltenders to the list of players who can get a penalty for intentionally dislodging the net. Man, I can hear the howls already, especially the way the goaltenders play and the way that the pegs exist and how there isn't, it doesn't seem to be, a standard for how far out the pegs are from one arena to another. As we've seen before, some nets come off easier than others, and depending how aggressive you are on post play, now with this rule, you might get dinged for a penalty for intentionally dislodging the net when all you've tried to do is play like you play around the posts as you've been trained. That one is fraught with controversy. Let's see where that one goes. Also, on a faceoff after an icing, right now, defensive center gets a warning for a violation, but the offensive center gets tossed. There is an ask for the offensive center to get a warning as well. These are just a couple of the things that are being talked about at the general manager's meetings in Florida and things that have been put forward by way of rule changes. Again, need to go through competition committee and board of governors for approval. A couple of things I wanted to go over with you before we get to Elliot here in a couple of moments. This is a really busy night around the NHL this evening. Tuesdays tend to be, you know, really heavied up here. And a couple of games you can watch on Sportsnet specifically. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the New Jersey Devils. Despite the fact that we've talked plenty about how these two teams seem like they're out of it, and their managers have behaved around trade deadline like they're out of it, they're not out of it, technically. It's going to take a lot of help from the out-of-town scoreboard. It's going to take a lot of luck. But still, these are two teams that, if they get hot and go on a run, are still not out. Like, technically, the Seattle Kraken aren't out in the Western Conference, but they're out. The Pittsburgh Penguins are technically out, but if you squint hard, you can say they're not, and ditto for the New Jersey Devils. You can watch this one on Sportsnet East, Ontario, and Pacific. So very much look forward to that game. And then later on tonight, this one should be a good one. The Tampa Bay Lightning facing off against the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, in between all of this, on Sportsnet Pacific, you can see the Buffalo Sabres facing off against the Vancouver Canucks. A little bit of a change from Rick Tocchet for the lines for the Vancouver Canucks as they face off against a Buffalo Sabres team playing the second half of a back-to-back yesterday, beating the Seattle Kraken as they try to claw their way into a playoff spot. Oh, quick note, too. Simon Edvinson's been called up from Grand Rapids with the Detroit Red Wings. They'll face off tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, I talked about this at the beginning of the program with Greg Wyshynski. I still don't think that the Wings are done. And they're not done. They're still right there. They just feel like they're done right now. That is called recency bias. And recently, it's tough not to have a bias because they haven't exactly played well. So those are just a couple of games. Hurricanes and the New York Islanders is a juicy one. Jets and Rangers as well. No Rick Bonus in that one. Minor medical procedure. He's gone back to Winnipeg. Scott Arneil will coach the Winnipeg Jets this evening. So a busy night around the NHL, and it's a busy time in Florida as well at the general managers meetings. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network, simulcast on Sportsnet 360, and wherever you get your podcasts. Back in a moment.